Actually, no, that's the same point. Population of the world, like last week, reached 7,696,696,000. Basically, it was 7,696,969,69,420.
You'll suck your Reddit user.
Hello, and welcome to Poorly Informed. As you can hear this week, I'm back, and I'm your host for this week's episode. I'm here with Max, Theo, and Peter for an episode all about sacrifices. And now, Max is already looking at me with a smile, so I can tell that this is going to be a good one. People have very different opinions on this. So the whole concept of this is we're going to frame it probably more in the climate change kind of area of thinking, simply because that's so relevant at the moment with Extinction Rebellion and that kind of thing, and the Paris Agreement being thrown around in the headlines every now and again. So the whole concept of this is it worth making real sacrifices that have an impact on real people now in order to guarantee or maybe just improve a future for everyone? Is it worth people suffering now, maybe? Or people taking some minor hardships now? Or is it worth reducing the quality of our life now, if you could put it like that, in order to ensure one in the future? At the same time, is it necessary? Or is it morally wrong? And these are some interesting questions that I know these guys have pretty strong opinions on. And I being your neutral host, of course, entirely neutral and a middle ground in all of this. So to introduce the arguments, we'll first go to Max, seeing as he was smirking at the beginning. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to be not very interesting and say I'm kind of in the middle.
Oh, boo! Polarization.
No, I'm more towards the side of don't make sacrifices. So sort of you've got to prepare for the future, but not make any serious sacrifices which are detrimental to people at the moment.
Okay. Theo, what do you think?
I'm saying we should sacrifice now heavily to, climate change is a big thing and it demands a lot of attention and resources, which we are not yet giving it.
And Peter?
I'm sort of on the opposite end to Theo. I think that to sacrifice heavily now would be a moral failing on the part of the government.
Interesting. Okay, so to start off with climate change, for anyone who hasn't seen a news headline in the past sort of 40 years, shall we say, basically the world's heating up because we keep pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. That's an established fact. As much as some people want to disagree with it, that is true. And for instance, if we look at the IPCC report recently that the UN put out, we need to do something like reduce our CO2 output by about 45% by 2030, and then to a net 0% CO2 output by 2050 in order to stay within this realm of 1.5 to 2 degrees of warming. And this is the realm in which they say we avoid most of the catastrophic and worse effects. This would obviously require some sacrifices, and some nations are very clearly not wanting to go along with this. Trump, for instance, really doesn't like this. So Max, what do you think we should do in this specific issue of climate change? Maybe not more generally, but what should we do here? Is it worth making these sacrifices for the future?
Well, I'm going to say no, because whenever you make a sacrifice at the moment, what you're suggesting is that we cut funding on most government spending, so public services spend less on them, and instead put their money towards like environmental research, right?
That could be one of the ways, yeah.
But the problem when you do that is that there are other detrimental effects from cutting, let's say, education. If you cut education, that is going to have a long-term effect of people having, lower grades, lower qualifications. They're then not going to be as productive in the future, and that's going to lead to slower economic growth, which will have a worse effect on the economy and then the country and other subsequent social issues in the future. So we may be making these sacrifices for the future, but the future may not be all that good because of the sacrifices we've made at the moment.
So this is the concept of sacrifices having unintended consequences that sort of the people don't intend, and then they end up kind of making the future not as good as it could be anyway.
Yeah, so my sort of reference or sort of like an example of this would be austerity, and how Will doesn't like austerity. This is why I'm kind of annoyed that he's playing an impartial host, because I wanted him to be pro-sacrifices so I could drop this and say austerity was all about cutting services and contractionary fiscal policy at the moment so that we remove the deficits, we can pay off the budget, and then have better long-term success. However, as that hasn't gone very well, there's been certain negative long-term effects which have arisen because of it, and we are not, you know, out of the woods and being all good at the moment, which if it had worked, we would have been.
Okay, Theo, how would you respond to that? How would you respond to the fact that you should never make these sort of short-term changes because they could have unintended consequences?
Four words. No pain, no gain. You've got as you went for a run today, I'm sure that maybe your lungs were burning and your knees were weak at the end of the run.
Arms were heavy, yeah.
Right, you gotta endure some losses because we're at a point, we saw the Paris Agreement in 2015, we kind of agreed we're at the point where we can't stop climate change, we can only limit it, and that even limiting it, we're at a bit of a crossroads. We can't have both stopping climate change and just continuing the way we are before. I think we can all agree on that, right? That's why we're having this podcast. We're debating how much of a sacrifice we need to have. So we are going to have to make some cuts to stop climate change. If we don't, then climate change is going to get worse. This generation is going to, and generations after it, are going to be progressively worse off. I think you can make all these nice noises. Oh, you don't want to cut education because that's really going to help climate change in the future. Well, no, not really. I think the time is now. And Extinction Rebellion have partly got it right when they say, are we the last generation? Are we the last generation to have relative comfort and to not... Bernie Sanders as well said, we're the first generation to... Yeah, I'm going to muddle this, but we're the first generation to understand climate change properly and the last generation to be able to do something about it. We don't have time to lose. But at the same time, we can't just muddle along and find money out of nowhere and magic money tree the situation away. We have to move money around, we have to make cuts, we have to endure, we have to tighten our belts in order to cut CO2 emissions, to stop buying polluting cars, to stop funding heavy industry. I simply don't think you can have both sustained quality of life and successful climate change policies. Something's going to have to go.
What can the UK do? What can the UK really realistically do differently by making big sacrifices that will suddenly change the future? So I'm just looking at like live monitoring of the UK's energy, like how much what we generate for energy. And the UK is actually really good, pretty good actually.
Yeah, the UK was pretty damn good climate change policy.
We are heading up to like 60-70% renewables and nuclear.
Yeah.
Like, it's impressive. This is a trend that will continue.
Yeah.
Our greenhouse footprint is relatively small compared to China, America, Canada, India. So what...
Is that per person or per capita, kind of?
Okay, so per person we're better than America and Canada, a lot better. Per capita, we're not better than India or China because there's a lot of them. There's a lot of people in those countries, but they are very, very polluting. Their trend of pollution is increasing massively whilst everyone else's trend is decreasing massively. So what can we do, Theo? Tell me how you would fix climate change with the UK and our negligible contribution to global warming.
Well, what I'm saying, well, firstly, we need to clarify the UK is actually pretty good at reducing CO2 emissions, at clean energy. We've got one of the best climate change policies in the world. If you ever think the UK's become a bit of a dump recently, this is one thing that we can hold up and say, this is what we're doing well. We still have a big influence in world affairs. We've lost a bit of standing recently because of poor leadership and because of the Brexit fudge, but we can provide resources, training, material to developing nations, smaller countries, to help them focus on renewable energy. Because if emerging nations and emerging economies quickly develop onto fossil fuels, they tend to stay there. And if we can divert them onto renewable energy quickly and develop growth industries in those areas, they will have an incentive to focus on... Let's talk about Africa. Right? It's a huge continent where, as I'm sure you can guess, it's very sunny. Right? The potential for solar panels and solar cells as a form of energy there is colossal. What if the UK could fund some of that? What if the UK could invest in solar energy in Africa? That would make a massive difference. Right? What... The UK, you tacitly admitted it there yourself, the UK still has a fairly large carbon footprint. Like, we still have a significant amount of industry and manufacturing. We are by no means perfect. If you look at the budget, where does climate change spending come from? Is it social protection? Is it health, education, defence, public order and safety, industry, agriculture and employment? Where's our climate change budget? Industry, agriculture and employment makes up 3.1% of the budget.
Waste and environment, maybe?
Yeah, so where's that? How much of the budget is that?
2%.
Which is nothing. Right, what could we create a climate change budget? So, you know, every time if we say the budget, we say 1% of entire government spending is going to go on combating climate change. That is a precise devolved budget for that purpose. It's about creating intentionality and getting involved and thinking about how we can help other countries reduce climate change as well, because it's an expensive business, right? A lot of these technologies still developing, still emerging. We've got to play a role in helping other countries get onto that.
I mean, you talked about Africa, and I was going to bring Africa up, because you talked about how the UK can invest money and, you know, introduce solar panels in Africa, and or Western nations can help continents. So sub-Saharan Africa is a population of, I think, about 1 billion people.
Sure.
And there's a reason why we have used fossil fuels, and it's because they work. They're incredibly good at generating energy for reasonably cheaply, and it's just burn them, you get the energy. If we suddenly said, no, stop doing this, stop using your fossil fuels, use these solar panels, you will stop you'll decrease the standard of life for people. Currently the standard of living in Africa is increasing. If you suddenly just cut off the main generation of energy, people's lives are going to be worse. It's going to stop improving.
You don't just pull the plug on a power station to say, right, here's an assembly kit for solar panels.
But what you are doing is you're adding more regulation, and regulation stifles economic growth, will decrease the quality of life and the growth that they have, and the growth that is desperately needed in poorer places like Africa and India.
You know what else it will stifle? Fossil fuel belching power plants. Right? Your arguments are valid in and of themselves, but you're not actually saying anything that would help reduce climate change. You're not like... You don't want to make any sacrifices for the future. Why is that, Peter?
I feel like if you sacrifice for the future, you're actively harming right now.
And why is that bad?
I think because currently there are 1.5 million people who use food banks in the UK. I think you can't go and look at them and say, oh yeah, we could feed you, we could ensure that you have a job and a house, but no, we've decided that some theoretical future for some children who aren't born yet, that we might have to help them a bit.
I want to...
Well, the hardest choices require the strongest wills. And you know what? I think Thanos had it right when he said you've got to make a sacrifice.
And speaking of wills, he's going to make a point.
And the other thing is, when you say, okay, I'm going to abandon my middle ground to shift over to Theo as he's taking on two at once for now. So
to be fair, you've kept it going longer than it normally goes. So.
Yeah. I mean, I managed like a good 10 minutes. So that's something at least. But what I was saying is that if you think of the sacrifices we're going to have to make, the sacrifices that we get told we have to make... I don't like venturing this territory because this is where my economics show out, and I was kind of trying to reduce this as much as I can. But when you get told how to solve climate change, it's like turn your lights off, drive an electric car. The overwhelming proportion of polluting industries are stuff that we have very little direct control over, and consumers don't have as much influence as it's made out to be. The way you make climate change is effective is political, by these massive industries that are polluting simply because it's slightly cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So why does the burden then necessarily fall to the... If you set up the system correctly, if you implement these changes correctly, why does it necessarily punish everyone? Why can't these companies that have been doing the brunt of the polluting take the brunt of the responsibility, rather than having it just spread straight to the population?
You go to a company and say, okay, we're implementing these regulations, this and this, you can't do this anymore, the cost to make these things suddenly shoots up, they have to lay off 20,000 workers.
Yeah, 20,000 people unemployed who now have to get welfare from the government, which under your policy of not giving anyone any money unless it's the environmental, you are basically condemning those people to a very poor quality of life.
if we look at the New Deal in the FDR era, because the Green New Deal is something that gets floated around a lot as this sort of new example of it, what happens when you, well, if there's a disaster in the economy, pump a load of money into green industries and supply jobs there? I mean, that's one alternative that doesn't. It requires the government to spend an awful lot of money, and don't get me wrong, that's going to be expensive, but it doesn't cost the working people directly.
I'm fine with that, as long as it doesn't...
Your argument is resting on the point that... Theo.
I'm fine with that, Will. I'm fine with the government going... I'm fine with a Green New Deal. I think a Green New Deal would be good, as long as it doesn't cut anything from anywhere else. The government just says, borrows millions and millions and millions, billions of dollars from somewhere, I don't know, and then spends that on climate change infrastructure. That's great. I support that. If they take the billions from somewhere else, from other people in the country...
Look, if you invest in education, right? Max suggested invest in education, make people, you know, better quality of lives, more educated, better job, etc., etc. Where's that money coming from? It's not just coming out of nowhere. That money's going to be cut from health, that money's going to be, or welfare, or defence. Okay, so you're effectively saying you're happy to deprive arms manufacturers of their job. You're happy to deprive old people of high quality care so that these young people can get an education. No, let me finish. You're happy to cut something out somewhere else and make, you know, that's going to have an adverse impact somewhere else. You cannot have a government policy, you cannot have government spending that does not affect anyone else. Okay, there's no risk-free, no catch-all, you know, you're not making sense.
If we borrow $5 billion, we're not taking it from the budget, we're adding it to the budget.
Yeah, but then you've got to pay it back, and that's going to come out of something else several years down the line.
But that's not the present. That's not the...
So you're right, your grasp of time and space is correct, but what's your point?
It would be marginal over time to replace the...
But
argument is a separate thing that probably deserves a whole own podcast.
I think
so...
if you look at the net human... happiness of the people alive currently, taking money is essentially adds no negatives, because money is all, it's just an invisible thing that an individual person has no control over and doesn't really affect them.
How does that
work? On a governmental scale, so we can take out as much money as we want as loans, and we can spend that on a Green New Deal, which will help the future, beat climate change, hooray, without harming anyone.
No, because one day that debt is going to have to be paid back, and that is a substantial debt. And where's that going to come from? Higher taxes, lower welfare, less spending on education.
Declare bankruptcy.
One thing that we have
never goes wrong for anyone.
One thing we have got in this country is we spent $10.5 billion on fossil fuel subsidies in 2018. Like, what happens? What if we just took that money off and stuck it on renewables? How would you feel about that?
Scottish people would lose their jobs.
Exactly. And however, they would not be able to find jobs in a green due to structural unemployment. There is a skills mismatch. Like, just because someone loses their job, you know, being a coal miner, right, they're not going to instantly move to be a solar panel engineer.
But if their training is in place, if they have the options to be able to, if they want to, for free retraining.
But that just adds.
So you're saying we
cost.
Keep the fossil fuels pumping and we burn?
No,
we don't burn because we'll be dead.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Maybe not. Right, we're talking about a 3-degree increase in temperature definitely by the year 2100. And there was recently a report published that said we're going to see disaster and intensity in weather by 2050, much sooner than expected. We're all going to be alive by 2050, apart from you, because you have an appalling. You're going to die of heart failure or something.
However, right, just look outside. Right, it's a nice day today. Right, it's quite hot.
It's April. It shouldn't be this hot.
But it's nice.
One of the hottest summers on record. We've had one of the wettest winters on record. This extreme weather is going to become the norm. Okay, people's houses are flooded. We have droughts in semi-arid areas around the world. England is going to run out of water by 2050. That's what the report said. If we don't do anything, we're going to be dying of thirst by 2050. Is that okay?
If sea levels are rising, how are we running out of water?
Yeah, salty water going everywhere. Oh, that's going to solve thirst.
Everyone can do what you do in year 7 science, where you get some sea salt water, you burn off all the salt, and then you drink it.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
Well, everyone goes down to the beach and just...
No, because that's so affordable.
It's
energy-wise.
I think about
desalination plants are massively expensive.
1.5 million people in London currently drink desalinated water.
Well, that's nice. How much do you reckon that's going to cost for 70 million people?
We wouldn't be, because it's not all water vanishes, dear. There just won't be enough. We'd only have to do a marginal amount of people to cover the...
So why not just spend... So you're saying invest in desalination plants. Why not just invest that money now to stop climate change, to stop the sea level rising by such a significant amount?
Because what the UK can do won't have much of an effect. And also, I was doing some thinking quickly. Diminishing marginal...
That's a first.
Diminishing returns. Each additional pound you spend on climate change has less effect than the pound spent before it. Right? Because there's only so much science that can be done in 5 years. You can't just chuck infinite money at science.
No, but I'd say we're still at a stage in the process where that pound will have a significant impact.
I'm not saying it won't, but you can't just chuck infinite money at it and get the solution.
Well, yes, you can.
No, because
yes, you can.
Your 100 billionth pound won't do anything compared to your first
one. Why not?
It will do so much less because there's a time component. There's a lag time in building. There's a lag time in research.
You mean time lag?
They're the same, Theo. We have to do research to develop batteries that are capable of holding enough energy to power a country with renewables. That will take years. That won't be done in a minute, no matter how much.
So why not start now?
I mean, that is the crux of the issue, because the later we start, the later it is before anything happens, and it's worse for everyone.
Do you need a moment?
You don't even need batteries. What we should do, right? We should have, what are those things called? You pump water up a hill, and then...
Sort of like reservoirs and stuff.
Yeah, do you know
hydro
that?
Whatevers.
Hydroelectric.
Let's call it a hydro battery.
There's a hydroelectric dam in Scotland that its sole responsibility is to provide electricity for the 10-minute break in the soaps, because everyone, like 20 million people in the country, get up and turn the kettle on.
Yeah. Ban soap operas.
You know, we only have like two of those in our country. These are things where you pump water up into a dam and then you release it over time to... You have excess energy generated from pump water. We only have like two. We could have loads of those.
How many valleys
Are you now saying that we get those now? Because that undermines the entire argument of just not doing anything.
Yeah, and there's also two things with that. We don't have that much land, and we don't have, like, do we have any valleys perfect for...
Yeah, like, try doing it to the Thames around here. You make no energy whatsoever.
Yeah.
I want to make a separate point.
Okay.
To bring it away from this moment.
As the host, I get to change this, so I'm going to say Max can make a new point now.
Okay, well, it's still along the theme of environment. Well, okay, it's along the whole thing. So when you're making sacrifices, we've all agreed it will make it worse for people living at the moment, right?
Yeah.
So do you know what happens when people's living conditions get worse? They go, become more extreme on the political spectrum. And I'm instantly going to devalue my argument here by bringing up the Nazis. That Labour guy the other week.
One time in your life, don't bring up the Nazis.
Just don't. So the Wall Street crash, hyperinflation, all that. Wait, two different points, never mind. But basically, poor German economy led people to be more extreme, support parties like the Nazis and communists, which then led to the Nazis getting in power, and they were bad. We agreed, Nazis are bad. And so, if you have the government being like, okay, people at the moment, you don't matter, we're all for the future, you will have people becoming more extreme in their views. They will start voting for other parties who will then come into place and say, hey, we don't believe in climate change, we're going to spend all our money on everyone at the moment because that's why you voted us in.
No, but
then that leads to a worse result in the
end. No, what you do is you win the election, you divert the entire budget onto climate change, okay? You have a massive impact in 4 years, and then you get voted out of office, right?
I think the whole thing...
It's a flawless plan.
I think the whole thing with this is me and Theo... Well, I don't know about Theo, but you two certainly seem to think the impact... In order to stop climate change, you have to do massive changes that actively make life much, much worse for the average
person. But
where
would this money come from if you're not making it worse?
Stop subsidising fossil fuels, properly invest, and then...
Get rid of the army.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Properly tax large corporations.
We're not serious, we're keeping the army.
And then you start looking at me and it's like, well, I think we should change the economy, but I'm not going to mention that. So, because I believe there are ways to solve climate change without necessarily destroying the sort of the life of
and,
the people.
And, Peter, what were you saying about taking out debt? We could do that, right?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so we have a range of policies available to combat climate change without resorting to gutting the economy. Yes,
then you're not making
cut.
Sacrifices, and that's not the question we're discussing.
Which is a good point, because that's what I thought it would come on to. So I have not prepared four scenarios, but I thought of them while we were going. So I'm going to say, okay, we're going to have three scenarios, right?
Can you count his fingers?
I can't. No, I suddenly changed my mind on one of them.
One,
so,
five.
Okay, the first scenario is, right, and don't dispute anything I say, because this is like as if this were true. If climate change was going to
I dispute that.
If climate change was going to be an utter disaster and it was like guaranteed to like kill half the people in this country by 2050,
right,
would you then support sacrifices now?
Yes, because I will be alive in this country by 2050.
Oh, really?
No, I would, not even for the selfish reasons of me dying, but also the fact that if we know that 30 million people will die in 30 years, then at that point, yes, you can make the sacrifices. I'm still not sure how much of an effect the UK acting on its own would do.
I think any big effect. I think the UK military power, nuclear power, seat at the UN Security Council, one of the strongest economies in the world, one of the most developed economies in the world, high literacy rate, high record of giving funds to poor countries, you know, cancellation of world debt, the UK played a leading role in that. Right? The UK had a big impact just by acting and doing and setting an example. It can passively have a big impact. Imagine the impact if it actually got involved and directly helped out. We're so busy laying into the UK that we forget we're a pretty decent country to live in. And we have a big impact on world affairs. So I'm saying big impact it could have.
Okay. So what about then in a case where, say, half the population was going to die by 2050 if we don't stop climate change, but in order to stop it, hypothetically, in this situation, we have to do something that would stop healthcare for everyone over the age of 60 because we can't afford it. We are actually just condemning people to die. And this is on the thing of sacrifices. Is the sacrifice of a smaller proportion of your population now? So you would
privatise the NHS.
That's not more cost effective though. But offering healthcare to half the number of people because you just can't afford it, rather than.
I would say yeah, because in the long run, it's still going to save millions more lives. Society is going to be preserved into the 22nd and 23rd century.
But they're not the people who are alive at the moment. No one asks to be born now. It's like, should you prioritise people who live in one area over another area just because it has better... It makes more money, it's more progressive. For example, London makes more money, makes much more money for the country than anywhere else, basically. It's more science advancements and everything. Should you give more priority to people who live in London just because they are more productive and contribute more to the country than people who live up north somewhere?
Random lottery.
So you just go in, like, I won the lottery, now I can use the NHS.
Even if someone told me that half the population would die by 2050, I still don't know if I would believe them. I think you can't sacrifice...
Yeah, well, in this scenario, you do know.
Yeah, in this scenario, it is a guarantee. I know for certain.
But would taking limited action reduce the number of... I don't think you can... I couldn't look at someone in the eye and say, I'm responsible for you dying now, with the chance of saving your child.
I think you've got to believe... I think that's fair enough. You've got to believe in the promise of a better society. Like, and that sounds very, like... That sounds like a conservative manifesto. You've got to believe that there is, you know, something better if we stop climate change. That's important. Who knows what the world will look like when we die, but hopefully if we do something to stop climate change, it'll be better and we'll have more hope.
I just found some data that I think is useful for my point. So America last year, North American households used 12,000 kilowatt hours per household of electricity. That means nothing to anyone because we don't know what that actually is. It's a lot more than anywhere else. In Asia they use 2,000 kilowatt hours per household. That's a sixth as much.
Wait, so the Americans use how much?
12,000. In Asia, they use 2,000.
What time frame is this?
This is 2016.
Oh, the whole year.
And America's had fallen from about 12,500 in 5 years to 12,000. So America's fallen by 1%. In Asia, it's risen by 4.1% because living standards are so much lower for people in Asia. You can't suddenly just block their lives improving. You can't put a halt on people's lives getting better to help the future.
Yes, you can.
Or a future. It's unfair on the people there.
It's unfair on the people who are going to die because the sea levels are going to rise, and because we're going to have extreme weather which will kill people, and because we are going to have less food production, because we are going to see an increase in water wars in the Middle East and in North Africa. jumping on those people.
But say we're a third country, right? And for instance, say for example, if China just said, no, we are just committing fully to fossil fuels because this is the fastest way to fuel our economic growth. How far does the rest of the world then intervene? Is it okay to then say, well, sanctions until you agree with us? Or is it, I mean, military action against China is obviously never going to happen, but say the US, for some reason, was this global, like, green power, like, superpower.
I think that would have an impact.
Is it acceptable for the US to turn around and say, you have, or maybe say, a smaller country,
I think the US in itself, being a global green superpower, would have an impact. I think that would reduce the likelihood of China doing such an act.
But how much are they then allowed to force that upon the rest of the world? So take for an example Iraq. Say, in this hypothetical world, that Iraq was refusing to curb its emissions above the acceptable level given by the United States. Is it okay then for the United States to, say, invade Iraq in order to stop and reduce their emissions? Is that something that you could... Is that something that is justifiable?
I think it's something that's not impossible. Justifiable depends how close we are. Depends how important Iraq is to change. Obviously, it hardly sets a good precedent. I think sanctions are more likely. So, yeah, I think sanctions are possibly a good way to go about it. I can see sanctions being used for worse things than trying to enforce a greener economy. I wouldn't say invasion... Because invasion is naturally a CO2, you know, you're powering aircraft carriers and heavy armoured vehicles.
Aren't aircraft carriers nuclear powered, some of them?
Well, some of the US ones are, yeah.
Ours
isn't.
Yeah, well, we've got two now.
Well, we've got one and then almost one.
One and a half.
One and a half. Yeah.
Although there were rumours of whether we'd actually be able to afford
to
buy it.
Do we have planes to go on it?
We're not getting planes for a long time. I mean, we've got a few, we've got 12. But
yeah. And it's operational now, it's fully operational.
You have 12 planes.
Which is a lot.
12 modern aircraft carrier ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really weird when you think that there's, 60, 70 billion people in this country and we have 12 planes.
70 billion? Wow.
Yeah, it's very big.
It's fully operational now, so.
It's just going to invade a third world country. Got to get our money's worth, you know?
Yeah, so I think... Action, not military action, because military action is a big CO2 emitter.
So there is a limit on how many sacrifices you're willing to take.
But yeah, I'm not willing to invade a sovereign country and kill thousands of their population just to say, right, CO2 caps, please, and then leave.
CO2 caps, please. Theo, what personal, and Will, I'm going to not host, but I'm going to ask you a question. What personal sacrifices would you be willing to make for this? Right now...
Give us an example.
Would you not eat meats? Because that's a big contributor.
Would you stop using, drive... Would you never drive? I know you're learning to drive at the moment. Would you just get a driving test and then never drive because it's awful with the environment compared to public transport?
Would you not...
Which have really good public transport around here.
Would you not eat, food that's wrapped in plastic? Or shopping clothes stores, they use an insane amount of plastic.
As a family, we don't drive that much, so parents both cycle to work, we use public transport fairly often. I am willing to make so many sacrifices.
Would you go vegetarian? If you promise to go vegetarian, I will change my mind in this argument.
Well, no, because I actually have to go vegetarian, and a large amount of my diet is meat.
I am planning on going vegetarian over the summer.
Why?
Because I feel like I should, because it's better for the environment and it's better for my health.
Yeah. Maybe a vegetarian priority, but I'm not going to go fully vegetarian.
I'm going fully vegetarian.
Are you trying to emotionally blackmail us?
No, I am. I've written it on my wall calendar.
That's quite impressive. I personally would go vegetarian because I am a relatively picky eater, and so I am not quite at having a vegetarian diet. But I'm willing to do several of those other things. Minimise driving, to reduce waste significantly, to not shop in unethical and heavy CO2 producing stores. Yeah, I'm willing to make the personal sacrifices that are necessary.
What about you, Will?
I'm willing to make some of them, yes.
Well, that's fair. It's all well and good saying I'm willing to make them, but in reality, how many would you actually...
I mean, I don't eat much meat already. Mm. I... I generally eat vegan unless...
He just eats malted Wheaties.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it.
Boxes of Weetabix or something.
Like, I try and... I'm usually eat food that is vegan unless it has meat in it. Those are the kind of the two extremes. So, yeah. But then, on the other thing, is that these sacrifices aren't the most effective way of me as an individual stopping climate change. The most effective way as for me as an individual to stop climate change is to vote a certain way and to... What I should be doing probably is protesting and making my voice heard for the political changes that would be needed in order to make this work. So, for example,
it's quite middle class of us. Yes, we're really good at making. We're really good at respecting the environment and reducing our waste, and let's all eat cleaner. And you know,
agriculture contributes to 9% of total US greenhouse gas emissions.
It contributes to 18% of global greenhouse gas emissions.
Damn agriculture! Burn all the crops.
No, not agriculture. Meat. Livestock accounts for 18%.
That is a lot.
And that's probably the easiest way to cut 20% of global greenhouse gas emissions is just to ban...
I'm being honest with where I'm at. I would struggle to be vegetarian.
Mm.
I recognise it is the easiest way, but also recognise if I felt it was necessary, I would reduce the amount of meat in my diet.
Being a vegetarian is a very small sacrifice to make. It doesn't seem that hard to be a vegetarian. How many vegetarians are in the world? Like 800 million.
The thing is, with making you make a sacrifice personally yourself, but that doesn't stop these massive corporations that are doing 1,000 times the damage, well, millions of times the damage that you are, continuing unhindered.
Yeah, but there's 7 billion people on Earth. If everyone makes these same sacrifices,
but then you've got to coordinate 7 billion people rather than a few hundred.
No, you don't. You only need to coordinate the 500 million richest.
Well, going back to what I feel would be probably the most effective way to have an impact on climate policy, at least in this country, is protesting. And what we currently see at the moment is, as we're recording this, Extinction Rebellion's been going on, and people have been doing things like gluing themselves to trains, blocking bridges, generally being, as some have described, a nuisance in London. However, they are getting their voice across, people are listening, and it seems to be a... There's no violence, it's not a violent thing. And
weren't like 100 people arrested or something?
No, non-violent, non-violent civil...
Like the first day or something.
Non-violent civil disobedience is exactly how they describe themselves. So they're getting in the way. So like, whereas protests like such as People Vote and Stop the War March in 2003 or whatever it was, sort of organised the closure of roads, Extinction Rebellion just rocked up one Tuesday morning and said, right, we're going to sit down in the middle of Oxford Road and not move. And so traffic was gridlocked. So it's a bit unorthodox, spontaneous, but peaceful, and they're very key to they really stress that it's non-violent.
Yeah, 570 people have been arrested in one week in London over this. What do people think about Extinction Rebellion? I'm all for it.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Well, that was
less controversial than I was hoping it would be. Well, what if say they stepped things up a notch and started?
Yeah, Peter, you're anti-sacrifice. You're saying it's okay to block half a million Londoners from going about their daily business.
Because this has a real impact on the people trying to get to work and trying to get home to their families after a long day at work. So why is that sacrifice okay? Why, when it's being made by someone else?
Plus the money it's costing.
Okay, well, I seem to have backed myself into a corner. So, I feel like they're protesting for a change in government policy that will increase the amount. They're protesting for a change in government policy that will change regulation that will... I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. I like Extinction Rebellion because climate change is bad, and I do think we should try and stop it.
Yeah, no one's saying that climate change isn't bad. It's just how we get about solving it and whether we should sacrifice an entire generation, basically.
But the people of Extinction Rebellion are exactly the kind of person that would be like want radical political change that would decimate the fossil fuel industry overnight.
In endorsing Extinction Rebellion, saying okay, you're basically saying you're okay for them to try and aim for carbon neutrality by 2025, which would mean decimating the, as Will says, the fossil fuel industry. So you're now going against your point.
True. But
no, because we could be carbon neutral without having to sacrifice anything by taking out massive debt. Then our present selves don't have to sacrifice anything. just
people in the future have to sacrifice things.
Well, no, because then the next year's budget, like a huge amount of it, has to go to debt interest and debt servicing. So that's a pretty immediate impact.
The thing is, with
I'd rather sacrifice money than sacrifice people's lives and how they live. Well,
yeah, that's a
but
given.
There's a direct correlation.
Let's
take out more.
There is no magic money tree, Peter.
But, I mean, there have been studies that are done and view, like, there are, like, economists who view national sovereign debt as something, as long as it doesn't grow at the rate, as long as the interest is lower than the rate of change of GDP, you're actually all right. And there are varying opinions on this. It could probably do, as I said before, with this podcast of its own, because it's an incredibly complex issue. But that is one way of putting the burden, having a financial burden on the state where it doesn't affect the individuals as much, unless it goes wrong and you end up in a Greece-like situation, and then it's terrible for all the individuals in the nation. So it's a bit of a balancing act in that regard.
Well, the whole thing is, like, morally, yeah, I don't like climate change, we should stop it, but then practically, how are you going to go about that? You know? And it's like, yes, sacrificing everything at the moment would probably be the best way to solve climate change. However, it's bad for the people that are alive at the moment, and you've got a moral responsibility to do your best for everyone who is alive at the moment.
My biggest thing is the fact that to solve climate change we'll mostly be having to ask people in who are far more disadvantaged than us to sacrifice when they are far, far less than us to sacrifice. And that just seems there's an inherent unfairness there.
But it doesn't have to be that way. Like if you look at France, right, with the change that started the Yellow Vest protest, right? That change was a change in tax law on, it was increasing tax on fuel, I think.
Yeah.
And this was something that it will stop, reduce people driving as much and will have a good impact on the environment. However, the reason a lot of people hated it was because
you take any excuse to protest, yeah.
The middle and working classes felt that burden much more than the upper classes. It felt like the people who have to drive to work because their public services have been cut were being punished because they have to drive to work. And because they can't afford newer cars that are more fuel efficient, they then have to pay more for fuel. And it feels like you're blaming the wrong, or you're putting the burden on the wrong people. But it doesn't have to be like that. And I do think that there are ways of combating climate change that don't just involve throwing the poorer elements of the world society under the bus. And I think it could be done.
Is the answer communism, Will?
Yes, but I said I wasn't going to mention that, so I'm not going to mention that anymore. Okay, so with that thoroughly disappointing ending with the Extinction Rebellion, absolutely no controversy whatsoever. Very boring.
Someone should say something controversial right now.
Theresa May is a competent Prime Minister and she's just doing the will of the British people.
Wow. Okay, and with that meandering somewhere end of that episode, I think we'll call it a day. So thank you all for listening. If you want to chime in on your opinions of the climate change and Extinction Rebellion, you can email us at poorlyinformeddiscussion@gmail.com or
Instagram or Twitter @podcastpoorly.
There we are. So I hope you enjoyed me being back this week, even though it was a bit of a meandering episode, but I've enjoyed being back, and we'll see you next week for
our last ever regular Poorly Informed episode.
Yeah.
After that, we'll be on hiatus for a while.
We've got exams and busy things, but we may well be back
in season 2 of the Poorly Informed podcast.
The summer holidays, boys.
So we'll be back probably sometime in August. Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. It's all a bit up in the air, so... Yeah. We'll appear on your feed when we appear on your feed. But that's not until next week. We've still got one more episode to round this out.
And
so.
It is a doozy.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. So thank you from everyone here and goodbye.
Okay, lads. My name's Will.
What is this terrible accent we're doing at the start of every episode?
I'm from the north of England. How are we? Today, we're doing... I can't think of a concise way of putting this.